A look at Connecticut high school football action. Sunday morning quarterback on WICC 600 and 95.9. The voice of Connecticut with your host, Dave Rudin.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Sunday morning quarterback. We got a good show set up for you after a really, really mundane, boring weekend of football. I'm sorry to start up in that tone, but there are a lot of interesting things that we're going to talk about. And joining us in a little bit, we're going to have Charlie Calabrese. The big game of the weekend was Wilton Trumbull, and it didn't turn out to be as close as anyone thought. Wilton rolled 35-12. And their quarterback, Charlie Calabrese, who rushed for four touchdowns, is going to join us. And we also have Fairfield Ward coach Christian Parisi, the Mustangs. I didn't get a chance to look it up, but they are 2-0 for the first time in I'm not sure how long it's been. So they're going to be Christian's going to be joining us. We'll talk a little Mustang football, mix it up this weekend. Joining me, as always, is Sean Ireland. Sean, how you doing?
You hit the nail on the head. I was really looking forward to that Friday night game, but it really turned out to not be much of a game, unfortunately. And, we're going to talk about Norwalk Ranch a little bit. That game ended up being okay, but not much this week. Really not much.
Guys, the only reason I'm happy that the game wasn't close. I did something I don't remember. I don't ever remember doing this. I played hooky Friday night for 2 hours. Okay. I would have been at that game, and there is a concert that a female singer-songwriter, and I want to plug her here because she's so good, but playing at FTC in Fairfield, which I think is the best venue in Connecticut to see a concert. But it's 5 minutes from my house, no warm-up band. I was home just as my photographers were starting to send in stories and the rise. So basically, other than just not being at a game myself, it was kind of weird, though, looking at Twitter, trying to follow the action. And then once I saw it wasn't a close game, I didn't even have to look at Twitter.
Yeah. We're going to break the game down in a little bit, but Well, good for you to get out, Dave. Good for you. You deserve a little break, you know.
I'm giving a plug. Kathleen Edwards, singer-songwriter from Canada. A lot of people haven't heard of her. New album out called Billionaire. Best album I've heard this year. She had a 6-piece band, and they really rocked. And this album rocks more than her previous albums have. And she's I'm just like a huge, huge, huge Kathleen Edwards fan, and I'd never seen her. And 5 minutes from my house, I just couldn't pass it up. So that is my music plug because she's tremendous and deserves the listening. So if you're a music fan, check her out. Sean, let's start up. And again, just going around the league, all blowouts. The closest game was Bassett beating Central 34-32. Would have been nice to see the Hilltoppers get off to that 2-0 start, and they almost did, and Bassett rallied. And then the game we're going to start with, A, because I was there, B, because it was the most interesting, C, because you have some additional insight that will help the discussion, and that's Greenwich's 27-18 win over Norwalk yesterday afternoon in Greenwich. And there is a lot to unpack in what was an okay game, but an interesting game in which we talked about it a little bit prior to the show. But Greenwich was flat. This was not the same Greenwich team. It was a trap game coming off Fairfield Prep and with Notre Dame West Haven. But I want to stress this carefully. Greenwich, yes, was flat, but they were flat against the wrong team. Norwalk's a good team, and Greenwich almost got trapped because they were lax against the team with a really good big play offense that stayed within for most of the game, one score, and just never was able to rally and pull it out. But and this may sound nuts, If I looked at schedules, I think if you said which team has the better chance of running the table, it's the Bears the rest of the way.
Yeah, Dave, that's true. Like, I don't know anything about New Milford. I really don't.
Yeah, me either.
Yeah, Ridgefield's a bit improved. Ludlow, you can't look, Ludlow's Ludlow. They're always good. You know, but if you're looking, Norwalk's going to be favored in a lot of the games. They got the rest of the way. So, they have a shot to do something special here. Dave, I'm sorry. We talked on your way in you told me, and I listened to it on the radio. All I heard was Greenwich is flat. Greenwich was flat. Greenwich played down. We played down to them. We played down. Not one person, you did, Dave, so one person, not one person came out and said, Norwalk played good. Norwalk rushed for 200 yards against the best linebacker crew in the state. Nobody's giving Norwalk credit, and it's a little frustrating, because Greenwich is good. Their coach's good, so, stop with it. Stop. Norwalk came out and proved that they were a good team. Just say that Norwalk, that's all they got to say. I'm very frustrated if you can't tell.
Two things can be true. Greenwich can be flat and Norwalk can play well and be a good team. Two things, and those two things are true. If Greenwich was not flat, I think the game is not an absolute blowout, but they win a little bit more comfortably. But this was the wrong team not to be playing your A game against, because Norwalk's dangerous, and we saw it with Easton Pace, the sophomore quarterback. You got me. You let me know about him in the summertime, and that was a big reason, or not a big reason, part of the reason I wanted to go to that game. And this is a dynamic sophomore quarterback who had scoring runs of 95 and 39 yards. And Greenwich had a good pass rush in spurts. And when they did, they caused problems and forced two intentional grounding penalties, including one in the end zone that was the first point to the game early in the second quarter. But there were also times, you didn't have to be a genius to know that the game plan is contain him and not let Pace get free. And there were other times he had, follow the yellow brick road opening in the middle of the field and took it. And those were his two big runs.
Yeah. Yeah. He had two huge plays. C.K. Virtus had a 50, 55-yard run.
Yep.
Which I'm shocked he got caught from behind, because that kid's fast. and they ended up not scoring on that drive. So I'm sorry, because I don't know the Greenwich kid's name, the kid that made the tackle. But if he doesn't make that tackle, Norwalk scores there. And then Gordon had that huge little screenplay where he broke a couple tackles and scored at the end.
Yep, 55-yard play.
Dave, I would have loved to have seen, because that last drive would have been completely – it would have meant a lot more. Norwalk High's kicker got hurt in week one. So they did not have a kicker going into this week. They couldn't find one. If they were able to convert all their extra points, the score would have been 27-21. Norwalk had the ball at Greenwich midfield with about a minute and a half to go.
It would have been great. It would have told you a lot about each team there.
Right. Exactly. And Greenwich did win the game. They did win. Come on, guys. You got to tip your cap a little bit, just a little bit, to Norwalk.
I think a lot of people did. It just probably didn't come out as much. And I understand that if you're looking from a Greenwich perspective, you're looking at they were flat. But for anybody looking at it impartially, like I said, two things can be true: a team can be flat, and another team could still play well. And Norwalk, I was going to ask you about the kicker, because it was obvious that either a kicker got hurt or they didn't have one, because they were going for 2 points in situations where you wouldn't go for 2 points.
Yeah, their kicker got hurt in week one. I know Coach, he came up to me. He was like, hey, do you know anybody in school? But yeah, we couldn't get anybody out in time. But if they had somebody just to kick, it would have been a little bit different, you know.
And that gets to the point we talked about Norwalk's future. The Achilles heel there is there's not a lot of depth, and that's a team that cannot handle any injuries to major players. And that's, you know, that's almost everywhere because there are not a lot of guys on the sideline, but they have a lot of really, really good starters. And again, you see the kicker going down. That had a huge impact in the outcome yesterday. You know, if one of these other guys that we've talked about were to get hurt, that would possibly kill their season.
Absolutely. And Dave, the big thing, like in high school, field position is huge. It really is. So we're just talking about extra points now. But the bigger thing is kickoffs. Norwalk scored to cut it to a one-score game. And then it's no fault to our kicker, who we currently have. Grant returns it to midfield.
Yep.
So we have all the momentum. And then they score three plays later. You know, Lopez scored, you know, ripped off a couple big runs. But, you know, if we can pin them deep, you know, keep them inside their own 25, 30-yard line, maybe it's a little bit different, you know. So it's not just kicking extra points. It's being able to kick the ball deep, you know, and trying to pin them down in their own area of the field.
And Lopez was the one consistent player for Greenwich yesterday. He had his typical big game, and the Cardinals needed it.
Yeah, he was good. That kid, he's very good, I can tell you that.
Well, why don't we take a break here and we'll come back, and I want to make one point that we talked about, and then we'll start looking a little bit at Wilton Trumbull. You're listening to Sunday Morning Quarterback on WICC.
The Rooten Report presents Sunday Morning Quarterback live on the Voice of Connecticut, WICC 600 and 95.9.
Okay, we're back, and how's this for great timing, Sean? Just got an email during the commercial from Tony Morello, the Greenwich coach. Hector had 23 carries for 234 yards and two catches for 25 yards.
Yeah, he was something special. He was something special.
Hey, this is probably a little premature, but it's a subject that I feel strongly about, and it's kind of worth bringing up now just because it's something I saw yesterday on the field after the game. But Easton Pace is special. He's a special kid. He already, you know, running the ball is real solid. He's got a good arm. He still needs to fine tune his passing a little bit, but that's going to come. He's a sophomore. But you've been the coach. You've been the coach at Norwalk. You were there a long time. Norwalk's the kind of school where kids get poached by the private schools. And I, you know, again, this will be more off-season talk, but I'm heading it off right now. I hope that we see Easton graduate as a Bear. You could tell from everything I've heard, it's important his family that he keep playing with the friends that he grew up with. He's a special kid. He had his family on the field after the game and was taking pictures with them, so it was a big deal. And, I just think I got to meet him, too. I'm going to write a story on him this week. But, yeah, if he goes somewhere else, I don't know where going somewhere else is going to help him in terms of college, getting to a better school. I think he'll get into the same kind of school if he stays there. And he's not going to have people waiting to interview him after the games if he goes somewhere else. And most importantly, he's not going to get to play with the kids he grew up with. And I just got to think in these kind of situations that it's got to be special to win with all these kids you grow up with and kids who you will develop a bond with because you're your teammates, but you don't have a past with.
Yeah, Dave, you know, and unfortunately, you know, Norwalk High, McMahon, Stanford, West Hill, you know, even the two Fairfield schools, you know, whenever there's good kids coming up the line, there's a line of coaches that are not in the FCAC that are just trying to get them, you know, and it's a year in, year out thing. And it's unfortunate, but it's just the way the world is now. You know, these schools, they promise them everything and anything under the sun. you know, sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't, you know, and it's just based on the situation that you are in. I obviously hope Easton graduates at Norwalk High. You know, I think Norwalk High, not just Norwalk, McMahon, the schools I just mentioned before, we have things that we can offer, you know, that are just as good. And you know, it's just, you know, it's unfortunate, you know, and Darien just went through it, you know. So Darien, you know, just went through it last year with their quarterback.
Wilton just did it. Everybody's getting poached now. I mean, that's a subject for another show. Because it's running rampant right now, but I've been to Norwalk for a variety of academic reasons, and I've gone and I've dealt with Kyle Seberg and the media program they have there, and which is outstanding. And you know, you're getting a very good education there. You're part of a really good program. I know it's a little frustrating maybe that you're there when you're not going to get to reap the advantages of having a home field, but you're still playing in front of your home fans. And like I said, if Easton goes somewhere else, there's nobody saying I want to do a story on you this week. Yeah. You're kind of in anonymity, and we've seen so many Norwalk players that have stayed there and gone on to have a lot of success at the college level, and I guess you could look at, you know, UConn.
Yeah. Dave, I have a long list of kids who I sent to Division I colleges. You know, you could look at Pat Miller, who came in after me. He sent four kids from his roster, are currently on the Division I, Wake Forest. Two are on UConn, one's on Delaware. Another kid's playing at Southern, you know, from that same team. You know, I send kids to Syracuse. We had a kid go to BC. We had a kid look at, like, it can happen. So, like, all these people, they hear, oh, reclass. No, like, just stick it out. And Dave, you just mentioned it. There's nothing like winning with your friends in front of your hometown. Norwalk High had their first home game the other day. There's over 1,000 people in the crowd because the band showed up, you know. So the band was there. The student section was packed. The parents were there. And that was against East Hartford. No credit, not a knock on East Hartford, but they didn't bring many people down with them, you know? So, like, you're playing in front of bigger crowds. There's more of excitement. There's more of a community feel. You know, Norwalk lost. There's four players that are playing on different schools right now. If those four kids were at Norwalk High, they're a top team in the league right now. You know, I could tell you that.
And they're going to be, you know, real quick, look at the schedule here. New Milford, I don't know a lot about them. Ridgefield, they're favored. Ludlow, I won't say they're favored. I just, based on schedules right now, I don't know a lot about, I don't know that I know a lot about any of the teams right now based on what happened this past week. But Ludlow, let's call pick 'em. West Hill, favored. Danbury, probably favored, but dangerous game. Stanford favored, Ward favored, McMahon favored. If you know, all teams have letdowns at some point. If they can avoid that, they should finish minimum of 7 wins and very likely 8 and quite possibly 9.
Yeah. You know, the big thing is, Dave, they got to stay healthy.
Yeah.
That's a big, they have to stay healthy. But put it this way. Out of all the games that are left, and again, scratch New Milford because I do not know anything about them. There's not one team there that you're like, okay, they have to play, you know, they have to play above and beyond. You know what I mean? They're either even or they're a little bit better. You know, I think Ludlow even. At Danbury is different than Danbury at home. I think that's closer to an even game. Ward, yeah. We don't know yet. You know, they're off to a hot start. But the other ones I think were fit. Ridgefield, you don't know. But, like, there's nothing there that's like, okay, you know what, this is going to be a tough one. I don't want to say tough one, but you know what I mean.
They got there's no game there that you say they can't win.
Exactly.
Exactly. And, again, they got to stay healthy. And this is an example where the schedule's got to get cleaned up a little bit, where, you know, we looked at Trumbull's brutal schedule. And Norwalk's got a pretty easy schedule. They probably should have one or two of the tough teams mixed in there. They got a pretty juicy schedule there for them. But, hey, you know what? they're going to be a real interesting follow the rest of the way.
Yeah, they definitely are. They definitely are. They're a fun team to watch. They have athletes all over the place. They're fast. You know, they're definitely a fun team to watch. And Dave, they have something that a lot of teams don't, and it was proven again yesterday. They can score from anywhere on the field.
Yeah.
You know, yesterday they let up the safety. They kicked the ball off. Brennan drives right down the field. Norwich stops him on fourth and goal. And then here we go. We're on the ball on the 5-yard line. I'm thinking, okay, three plays, punt. No, next play, 95-yard touchdown. So they could score anytime they have the ball from anywhere on the field, which a lot of teams, they cannot do that.
Kind of cool that we spent the first 25 minutes of the show talking about 20 minutes of the show talking about a team we don't normally talk about.
Dave, we can talk about Norwalk all you want.
Bro. Yeah, I know. And they deserve to be talked about, so it's nice mixing it in. Why don't we slip in, and we'll talk about them a little bit more after, but we got Charlie Calabrese coming on shortly. You know what? Wilton just it was a game of – we were all curious about Wilton Trumbull, two teams that had a shot of we all figure have a shot of making the state playoffs. And when they're difficult schedules, whichever team was going to win was going to be put in a real advantageous situation. And the game wasn't close. Credit to Wilton. Charlie Calabrese, if people aren't familiar with him, known a little bit more for his lacrosse play. And he's going to Army next year. And he's just a dynamic athlete. He was a running back last year when Joey Haggerty was quarterback, and he's taken over a quarterback and had four touchdowns. And Jake Padilla, who I found out through editing the story that my writer wrote, is his best friend and had four interceptions, which is tied for second most in state history. An impressive win for Wilton.
Yeah, big time win. And Dave, how crazy is it that we had a quarterback who rushed for four touchdowns, and me and you had a conversation, all right, who should we bring on? Because two kids had a phenomenal game, you know, so like that's pretty crazy there. Jake Padilla had a great game, four interceptions himself. You know, Coach DiNunzio, he's doing a great job in Wilton. You know, they've been solid, you know, the past 4 or 5 years now. So, you know, they're a team nobody wants to play right now either.
Yep, I think with Wilton, it's a team we knew was good, and we weren't sure how good, and they took a real positive step in showing us they're a legit playoff contender. We'll get to more about this game, and we'll talk about it with the aforementioned Charlie Calabrese when we come back on the other side. You're listening to Sunday Morning Quarterback on WICC.
High school football lives here on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut, with Sunday Morning Quarterback and your host, Dave Rudin.
Okay, we're back, and we're still talking Wilton Trumbull, 35-12, Warrior win. Impressive game. I don't know if everybody thought it would be this close. I'm guessing our guest probably is not surprised by the outcome, and he scored four touchdowns, as we mentioned, to make sure it wasn't a close game. And that's Wilton quarterback Charlie Calabrese. Hey, Charlie, how you doing?
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing all right. Nice win. What's the mood in Wilton right now?
Yeah, it was definitely a good win for us. Like I said, on Friday night, we had that game circled for a pretty long time, and we knew it was a must win for playoff berth and all of that. But yeah, the Moon and Willens, we're pretty excited about how our season started right now, 2-0.
Yeah, I hope you guys haven't had to pay for any donuts or breakfast sandwiches or anything. They should be doing a little bit of celebration. Let's just talk a little bit about the game, and I normally would have been there, but I played hooky for a couple hours that night. So you guys, I was following on Twitter, and you guys got off to a really good start and really weren't threatened at any point.
Yeah, definitely. Our first two drives, we went out and scored. It was 13-0 all throughout the first half. And then it was the last drive. We had a big fourth down stop in our own territory, and we got the ball back, and we were driving, and there was about 2 seconds left on the clock. We got the ball down to their 10-yard line, and we went for a field goal. And we missed it. It got blocked. And then we come out in the second half, and there was a penalty after the missed field goal with, like, an unsportsmanlike conduct. So we had great field positioning after their kick got moved back, and we went down in the third quarter in the first drive, and we scored again. We came out hot, and at that time it was – I think we'd missed one of our extra points, so it was 20 – or no, we went for the two-point conversion, so it was 21-0. So we were always ahead, but yeah, it was a must need win.
Was there something, and obviously you're a running quarterback and you're going to be carrying the ball a lot, so it wasn't something unusual, but was there anything you saw that led you guys to think you were going to be as effective as you were with the ball in your hands?
Definitely. I mean, throughout the week, we didn't know how much we were going to have to pass or run because they do have some big dudes up front. And so we had a game plan for both. We threw the ball as much as we could, but I mean, they had two great middle linebackers that were giving a lot of pressure throughout. So we knew we had to hit them outside instead of inside the tackles. And that's what we did. I mean, credit to our offensive line. I mean, they played great that game for the run game. We have this formation called Ugly. And that's like our power back formation. It's pretty hard to stop with the big guys up front.
Sean, I'll let you jump in here.
Hey, Charlie, how are you? First off, I just want to rewind a little bit. Did you know, like, as soon as last year ended, did you know, okay, I'm going back to quarterback? Did it take a little persuading, or did you know right away you were coming in this year as a quarterback?
It was about right after last year. I had my end of year meeting with Coach D and our offensive coordinator, and yeah, I knew it was my spot to lose.
That's awesome. That's all. And I'm sure you know this right now. You're on pace to rush for 40 touchdowns this year, which I believe would be a state record.
Yeah, that'd be pretty crazy. But one game at a time.
And then You said you had the game circled on the calendar. You know, obviously, Wilton has a historical program, as does Trumbull. When you know the game's in hand, you know, like, what's the feeling like? Like, what's it like knowing, okay, a big game crossed off the list? Like, tell me what the feeling was like for that.
Yeah, definitely. It was a big relief coming back onto that bus and having another hour car ride home from Trumbull. Coach said before getting on the bus, he said, you don't want to have a sad bus ride home from Trumbull. You guys want to be listening to music, having a good time. And everyone had some little butterflies before the game because Coach had told us that how big this game was from preseason and on. So we knew how much of a much must win it was for us. And Coach's like motto this year, Coach D, is, it's one play at a time, it's one drive at a time, and it's one game at a time. And so he said, it's like he said after the game, it's our second game down, so we just got to keep on going.
Yeah, one of the reasons we played this game up and talked about the importance of it is you just look at your schedule. In the next 3 weeks, you've got Cheshire, Ludlow, and Staples, and then the second and third to last games back-to-back or Greenwich and St. Joseph. So you would have put yourself in a really difficult position. You're already with the schedule in a tough position, but this game was of even greater importance given your schedule up ahead.
Yeah, definitely. Wilton's always idolized as a middle-tier type of team just because of the amount of kids we have and the up and down seasons we have. But ever since Coach Nunzio has taken over, I mean, I've always thought Willen's a tier one team, but not everyone sees it that way, which is okay. So sometimes we do get a little bit of a harder schedule, and we just got to show other people what we're made of.
I think it says something about, you know, piggybacking on what you just said. You guys were 5-5 last year, and maybe 8 to 10 years ago, people would have just said, you guys are usually around 500, a game or two ahead, or a game or two maybe behind. But 5-5 last year, and we're all talking about how it wasn't a horrible year, but it wasn't a year that we've expected from Wilton of late.
Yeah, you're right. It was definitely a rocky season last year. We had a lot of injuries last year that hurt us. And that's like one thing that we've been focusing on this year, to the next man up mentality. So, I mean, Wilton doesn't have known for having about 70 kids on the JV team, like Greenwich and New Canaan and Darien. So we've got to make sure that if someone were to get injured, there's another guy up. So we've put in full trust in our younger kids, because we don't have many. I mean, I think we have 7 juniors on our team right now. So the sophomores have a big role of stepping up. I mean, even just helping us out in scout team.
As good a year as you had carrying the ball last year, you're really known first to many people as a lacrosse player. And after this year, you're headed to Army, which I know there's at least one Wilton player on the team. But what led you to a service academy?
Yeah, so I've had three older brothers ahead of me all go to the service academy to play lacrosse. So they were definitely a big influence on me continuing that path. But my two oldest brothers went to the United States Naval Academy and played lacrosse there. And then my brother Ben is a sophomore at West Point right now. So, I mean, just getting the opportunity to play college lacrosse with my brother was a huge influence. And just Coach Alvarisi at Army. He's just such a great guy. And, like, the way I felt welcomed right after started getting recruited by them was, like, I knew that place was my home.
That's great. What you've got this gauntlet you guys are going to have to run now. You got past the first team. What's it going to take given this schedule? And obviously you're another one of the teams that would not handle a key injury very well. You've got a good starting group. You've got a little but not a great amount of depth. And you're going to be going up against, as you mentioned before, some of these schools with large numbers. What's going to be the key? You'll get bonus points. What's going to be the key to getting into state playoffs?
Yeah, definitely. Like you said, we don't have that many kids for depth for injuries-wise, so it's almost practice. We take it a little bit easier. Maybe we're not going 100% full of the time to maybe someone doesn't roll their ankle or something like that. And like Coach said, it's like we can't look in the future. You just got to play in the present. You got to take it one game at a time, and can't look at, I mean, we got Cheshire this Friday. We can't look for Ludlow on our homecoming. We just got to play Cheshire, beat Cheshire, and keep on going and just take it one game at a time. And just can't get over our heads and just keep playing smart and keep playing the way we've been playing. And I think we're going to have a really good season.
All right, well, Charlie, I've got to cover you a little bit over time, and you're a class person as well as a great athlete and great win. I didn't even get to bring up Jake Padilla and the friendship. I forgot to do that, but I think we're going to have a story about Jake tomorrow with the 4 interceptions. So that was kind of a cool dynamic as well. So congratulations on last Friday, and best of luck. I know I'm going to see you at least once, if not twice, over these next few weeks.
Great. Thank you so much.
All right. That was Wilton quarterback Charlie Calabrese. We're going to take a break, and then Sean and I will bounce around the league a little bit more. You're listening to Sunday Morning Quarterback on WICC.
Expert analysis and all things high school football. You're listening to Sunday Morning Quarterback with Dave Rudin, live on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
Okay, we're back, and Sean, he's just a class act, and it says something when you have a family of four kids going to service academies, what the Calabrese clan is like.
Yeah, you know what? I don't know who the Mr. and Ms. Calabrese are, but they're doing something, right? I could tell you that. You know, four kids, all four playing sports in college, let alone at a service academy. You know, they're doing something right, so credit to them.
You look at that schedule, that and Trumbull's got a very difficult schedule. They got hit the hardest with this way this new schedule works out. But this was such a huge swing game in terms of two teams sort of in the same situation, navigating difficult schedules. And I think we're going to look back on this later on in the year as just something that was really seismic to their state playoff chances.
Yeah, you know, we talked about it on the last segment. They got some doozies coming up, I can tell you that, you know, in a row, and then a couple at the end of the year as well, you know. But if they lost that one on Friday night, you know, their road to the playoffs is a lot harder.
I can't remember. I know I had it in a preview, but they've gone a long time without gone a long time without a losing record, or maybe have had one losing record in quite a span. But you know, they're considered in. I would consider them at the very top of tier two right now. It's hard to really put them with Greenwich, Darien, New Canaan, St. Joseph, just because of past history and what these teams have done. But they've been right on the cusp there, and they've gotten some wins. They beat New Canaan within the last 2 years. I think it was 2 years ago. So it's EJ's done a really, really good job with that program and taking a team that was anywhere from like 3 to 7 wins on a given season and making them a winner.
Yeah, what EJ's doing there, they're just, it's more consistent what they're doing. You know, 2 years ago, they were in the state championship game. You know, last year they were 5-5. You know, they were 1 or 2 plays away from being 7-3, you know. So what EJ's doing there, it's unbelievable. You know, the good thing is we'll know in a couple weeks. You know, first they got to take care of Cheshire, then Ludlow, but then they play at Staples. So when they play at Staples, we'll know right there where are they. Are they the Tier 1 team or are they the Tier 2 team? I'm with you, Dave. I think they're very top. They're the top of the list of Tier 2, but you could make the argument they are a Tier 1 team.
I'll tell you what, I think that game this year with Staples is really interesting.
Well, yeah. Oh yeah, very much so.
More interesting than in past years. We'll see, but that's one that I definitely have circled. The other game yesterday, and we staffed it, and again, this is where we get into not really knowing so early on how good teams really are. You know, Danbury was coming off a 13 sack win against an opponent we don't know much about. St. Joe's didn't play its best and still only lost to Daniel Hand on the last play of the game. And as we talked a lot about last week, the last play with an asterisk. But a game where we thought maybe Danbury was going to be competitive with them and could maybe threaten them a little bit. And St. Joseph just rolled to a 41-0 win.
Yeah, unfortunately, there was no threat there. No threat at all, unfortunately. You know, Danbury, they were facing a team that they probably did not want to face after how St. Joe's lost, the fact that they lost and how they lost. I'm sure all week this week they're flying around in practice. I'm sure they were. And, you know, unfortunately for Danbury, they just ran into a buzzsaw this week.
Yeah, it was of all the weeks to play them, it was the exact wrong week to do it. And 400th win also in St. Joseph school history. And Joe Della Vecchia has probably been around for about 75% of them or so as a player and as a coach and a program that just wins every year.
Yeah. Yep. Year in, year out. You know. you know they do have some. They have some tough things. You know, they are technically a smaller school. You know, so they play a lot of schools bigger than them. You know, but at the same time, you know, they have more kids in their program than a lot of the double L schools do. So, you know, but, you know, credit to Joe, credit to his staff, you know, year in, year out, they are in the state playoffs fighting for a legit chance to hold that trophy over their heads in December.
The other game that I'm not surprised by the outcome, but I was kind of a little curious about how they would perform. And that was New Canaan and Ridgefield, and New Canaan was such a prohibitive favorite, but Ridgefield was coming off an opening win, and I was more curious about how competitive they could be against New Canaan in terms of long-term success, and not to say that Ridgefield's not going to end up having a good season, but they were outclassed 47-0. They were held to, I think it was 57 yards of total offense. Maddox Hoffman has gotten off to a good start at quarterback for the Rams, and he was the one unknown coming into this year, and just a business-as-usual game in New Canaan.
Yeah, you know, Dave, I think a lot of people, you know, they see that score and they're shocked, and the reason being is like, not too long ago, Ridgefield was the Tier A team, you know, and then every year, including myself, I'm like, okay, it's Ridgefield. They're going to bounce back. It's Ridgefield. They're going to bounce back. You know, they're falling on tough times right now up there. You know, are they going to be able to turn it around? You know, that is the question. New Canaan, I think they're in the class of their own. I'm sorry to say, but, you know, they really are. You know, We'll see. Ridgefield, they're not Ridgefield of old, put it that way.
No, it's not. The program's had a little bit of a struggle the past couple of years, but wouldn't be surprised if they turned it around real soon. And again, they were playing the number one team in the state, so can't write them off in terms of having a 500 or better record just yet. We'll learn a lot more in the weeks ahead. And, yeah, I've always said it takes 2 to 3 weeks. And for me, it's going to take a third week to kind of figure this out. And then, you know, Darianne, Brian McMahon, 44-0. You got West Hill and Ludlow, 55-6. So haves and have-nots there. But Fairfield Ward, I don't know the last time that they've been 2-0, but they are right now. And again, it's kind of cool that we're talking about teams early on that we haven't been talking about in the past. And they're coming off a 32-0 win over Bullard Havens. And they got a lot of strong performances. James Della Volpe back at quarterback, and he threw for 230 yards and 3 scores. Jalen Jacobs, their running back, did it all with 75 yards rushing and 56 receiving and a pair of touchdowns. And then Andrew Shelov, a kid that I was told about to keep an eye on during the preseason, he had 11 catches for 130 yards and 2 scores. And, yeah, they haven't – the Ward hasn't had a difficult schedule yet, but – you know what? You got to beat the teams that are on there, and after 2 weeks, they have.
Yeah. You know, you said it. Their schedule's not tough, but they don't create the schedule. You know, they have to play whoever's in front of them. And, Dave, the thing that they're doing, the games they're winning aren't even close. You know, so they're beating the teams very handily. You know, you brought up Della Volpe. I believe he's a 3-year returning starter.
Yeah.
You know, so whenever you have a 3-year returning starter, is very good, especially at quarterback. You know, his dad is the former head coach there, so I'm sure when he gets home from practice, his dad has the film ready to go, you know, loaded up. So, you know, he's going to probably be one of the best coach kids in the league. You know, so, you know, we'll see. We got Central this week, you know, which looking into it, they should be favored. And then they got a very interesting game at Danbury. So, you know, they have a chance going into the bye week, looking at, you know, anywhere from 5-0 to 4-1, 3-2, which is phenomenal. So,
yeah, they'll get to a game against Danbury. Will be telling about where they really stand right now, and the same for Danbury. And James doesn't have to wait to get home for a little bit of scouting, because his dad's still on the staff. He's working with the offensive line.
So yeah, I know that. I was just saying, when he gets home.
Oh, yeah.
There's no chance that they're just going home and doing math homework. He's going home watching film.
Yeah, I don't think Duncan's helping him with his math homework. I'm just kidding, Duncan. I'm just you're helping him more with his science. I know.
Yeah.
No. Duncan did a great job coaching there, and he a program that's been poached a lot and was a source of frustration for him, and understandably so. But it's nice that we're talking about some different teams. Sunday Morning Quarterback, we go 90 minutes this year, and we talked a little bit about Ward, because joining us on the other side is their coach, Christian Parisi. You're listening to Sunday Morning Quarterback on WICC.
Everything you need to know about high school football. The Rudin Report presents Sunday Morning Quarterback with Dave Rudin, now on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
Okay, we're back, and as Sean and I have been talking about week two, and it's kind of cool that we're talking about teams that we don't always get a chance to talk about. It's always a lot more fun, certainly for me as part of the media, when you see teams that haven't always had great success in the past, have it in the present, and that's certainly true of the Fairfield Ward football team, which, as we mentioned, off to a 2-0 start. Has outscored its opponents by a 74-20 margin. And joining us right now is Mustangs coach Christian Parisi. Christian, how you doing?
Hey, very good. Thanks for having me on this morning, Dave.
Nah, thanks for coming on. Congratulations on this great start. Take us through. You played your two Alliance games first 2 weeks, and we went over some of the offensive stats for your guys, but. Tell us a little bit more about the win on the other day, Friday night, I guess.
Yeah, it was awesome to see our boys come out and put together a full defensive effort. I think that's what we lacked in week one. We let our opponent kind of get up on us quickly there. We responded great, but the whole focus this week was to set the tone from the start, and our defense really – they really did a great job. Even though we went 3-and-out to start our first series on offense, defense just played absolutely unbelievable. My defensive coordinator, Matt Fallon, he's essentially been with me for the last 10 years. I had him at Amity when he was a young 23-year-old coach, and I think this was his first shutout. So I'm thrilled for him and for all the boys that are buying into everything that Coach Fallon is trying to bring out there on defense.
I got a chance to visit you kind of late into the preseason. And I remember you talking about how last year was really setting the foundation, and you found this off season to be a little bit easier in terms of starting to build on it, in terms of having some returning players back. And I guess you're probably not totally surprised based on all that, on what the team's done so far.
Yeah, I think up to this point, things are going. If you had a schedule, which no one really does when it comes to this sport and at the high school level, but I guess we're on schedule. I think that this offseason was easier for a couple of reasons. Between the second year in the system that we've brought in here from our previous stops, but moreover, the kids understanding what our expectations were. I think that a lot of our boys, no matter what ends up happening once they graduate from Ward, whether they go on to play football at another level or they go to college or they go into the work world, they're going to see the difference of what they thought hard work was and what hard work really is. They're going to see the difference between what investing in yourself and in your team and just doing the bare minimum is. So it's already become a little bit easier because of that. But the meat and potatoes of our schedule is still in the future, so we've got to buckle down. In fact, we're here today because we are our school system is off on Tuesday for Rosh Hashanah, so we are not practicing Tuesday. So we came in today to get ahead of it, so we don't miss a day. Not one single team moving forward is not in our sight. So there is no looking past anybody. We are all locked in on Bridgeport Central for this week.
How much easier is it when you have a returning quarterback and a three-year starter now in James DelVolpe?
Yeah, it really opens up the playbook. Moreover, and this is such a testament to James, he's transformed himself. He's become an absolute true leader. I'm so impressed with how he's been taking control of the team, especially when things are tough. You always want your leader to shine and be its brightest when things aren't going your way. And even though, you know, we've played some pretty good offense and some great defense, we've had, you know, rough patches in both games and times where we needed to bring things together. And he has been our glue, and I couldn't be more proud of him. But yeah, having a 3-year starter, I'm very spoiled right now.
Sean, jump on in.
Coach, how are you? Congrats to a great start to the season.
Hey, thank you very much. Great to hear about from you.
All right. So question, like, so, you know, we know kids are kids and you guys are off to a great start and you guys have Bridgeport Central. What are you doing right now? And you just mentioned it before, your eyes are on Bridgeport Central. So what are you doing not to look past them? Because they're a different team as well. So, you know, like, hopefully the boys are looking at the 2025 Bridgeport Central, not 2024.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Coach Miller things are starting to click over there. And, you know, I think what we can do as a staff is to always show these guys how locked into our upcoming opponent we are. They're not, these are smart kids. These kids can see it on your face. You're not going to be able to put one over on them. They know that our film study and our preparation and getting our scouting reports out to them early is on our forefront. And those are the things that our staff make sure that we do so that we don't ever give them a chance to think about looking by anybody. I mean, at the end of the day, this is a league game, and, you know, we are the rest of the way out, you know, have to contend with some wonderfully coached football teams and some great athletes. And if you look at specifically the quarterback for Bridgeport Central right now, that kid can go anywhere on the field. He's an unbelievable athlete outside of football as well. And our boys see that on film already. You know, we savored the win on Friday night, but Saturday, I didn't even share the film with them. We were on to Bridgeport Central almost immediately. These guys have to, it's cliche, whatever you want to call it, but honest to God, it's a 1-0 mentality every week. We have to go 1-0 on every rep and every day, every week.
Good. And Coach, that's a great job. Talk about, and Dave just mentioned it a little bit, you know, James DelVolpe, you know, how important it is to have a returning quarterback, let alone a 3-year returning quarterback. But what is also the benefit that, like, you have who happens to be his father, a former head coach on staff. So, you know, like, when he's getting home, he's getting coached up even more. Tell me about what it's like having a quality assistant coach on staff as much as Duncan.
I don't know if anybody that was a first-year head coach was – I mean, frankly, I was spoiled. Having a veteran head coach, a state championship-winning head coach there with me every day, the amount that I've been able to lean on him for the – specifically for some game day procedure stuff and things that just a veteran coach brings to the table, I'll always try to find someone that's been in this thing longer than me, because the minute any of us think that we know everything, we're like, you're done at that point. And Coach DelVolpe, even Friday night, he brings just a whole nother sense of the sport to the team. He is there when maybe the kids are starting to get a little bit crazy. He's the first one there to get them locked back in. I couldn't do what we're doing this year without having him there to help us around all of the, even the non-football things that happen throughout a game. He's been fantastic and an unbelievable mentor for me.
I just want to say great start to the season and keep it up the rest of the way.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Christian, how do you look at the long-term picture for your program? I remember when Mitch Ross came over to Ludlow, and everyone's talked about how hard it is to win in a 3-school town, especially when one of those schools steals some of your best players. And just having to split the talent there, and it's been a bit of a struggle. Mitch came on and has been able to get the program in terms of having sustained success. Year two so far is going very well for you. What? How do you look at trying to mirror what Ludlow has done in terms of getting your program to the same state in a few years?
Yeah, I think that what Mitch did, and it was a fantastic job of getting involved in our youth program early and often. I took a page out of his playbook last year, and myself, him, and some other guys coached the 3 8th grade teams this year. Our staff is involved with the 6th grade level, and you know, even Monday night I'll go hang out with the 7th grade guys on Monday night when we get off the field early for observance of the Jewish holiday. So it gives me a chance to go and be down there with them more. I will say that it was an immediate response here. Our freshman numbers went from, I think we finished the season with 21 last year, we're over 30 right now. So our program is growing, and it's growing in the right way, where not only do we have more kids that were playing FYF continuing to play football for their town, but we're, those kids are also so excited about football, and each, both Mitch's team and my team, had tremendous success at eighth grade last year. So they're so into playing at our respective schools. I think that's the battle that we have to win on the day by day. Wins are always great. Wins are going to get more people involved in your program no matter what, but giving the kids a fantastic experience, especially when they're in sixth, seventh, and eighth grade, that's a giant part of my plan. In fact, I need to do more this year too. We had some field issues and light issues at the beginning of the season this year, and it left us kind of scrambling a little bit. Now that we're all set, it's going to allow myself and my staff to be highly involved with the 6th grade, 7th grade, and 8th grade teams and try to help out and just get in front of these players as much as possible. You know, there's so many perspectives between myself and Mitch's staff that these kids really have a great chance to learn so much about the sport, and moreover, not just the sport, but what goes into youth sports and high school athletics in general, and how important it is to set the framework so early on.
I think what you just talked about also is an example. People don't really know how much time coaches put into their program. I mean, a football coach in particular, the hours you put in just having to deal with Fairfield Ward stuff, and then you look at now the extra time you're spending going to the youth programs, which isn't family time or isn't additional time that you could spend on. Well, you are spending it on Ward stuff, but not tangibly right now. So I don't think people realize how much time you guys all put in to try to get a program to have success and then sustain it.
It is a lot. And I think last year I probably didn't manage my time the best way. I left, you know, I have a 9-year-old at home. My son Julian is involved now highly with golf. And then in the wintertime, he's a big skier. So I'm trying to do better at home this year too, to keep things a little bit more balanced. And the closer I can get to a little bit more balance, the more it allows me to focus on everything stronger. So that old, you know, work harder or work smarter, not harder adage, I think everybody that coaches the sport can probably take some advice in that, because there is the only thing that we have is time, and it's a finite amount of it. So we've all got to try to do our best to manage it properly.
Well, Christian, with the schedule you have the second half of the year, it was really incumbent for you guys to have a quick start, and you're already there at 2-0, and hopefully your team plays the way it's been playing, and you get a win against Central and then go into Danbury and Stanford with 3-0 record. You've done a great job there so far. It's kind of nice that we're talking to the Fairfield Ward coach early in the year, and I hope it gets to the point we're talking to you late in the year as well, real soon. So congratulations on the start and continued success the rest of the season.
Thank you so much. I wish everybody out there good luck this week going into their games. Let's all come back with W's unless you're playing us this week.
All right. Thanks a lot. That was Fairfield Ward coach Christian Parisi. We'll take a final break, and then Sean and I will look ahead to next weekend.
The Rudin Report Live presents Sunday Morning Quarterback, a look at Connecticut high school football with Dave Rudin on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
Okay, we're back. Going to finish up a really good week two show here. And Sean, like I said, you know, people in the media, people are accused the media of playing favorites, which is ridiculous. And we do have a football league that has been a lot of have and have nots. But for me, I know people ask who I root for. I always say the same thing, and it's true. I root for the best story. And it's kind of nice that we're talking to people we don't always talk to, and that Norwalk and Fairfield Ward are off and having good starts, and so are some of the other programs that haven't traditionally had sustained success.
Yeah, it's always good. You know, Dave, and we spoke about this in our preseason stuff. Like, what do we got to do to represent all 15 teams for football? And the biggest thing to do is, obviously, you know, we got to have a good story. We're not just going to mention a team just to mention them. You know, Central last week was great. The fact that we got to talk, it was probably the first time we talked about Bridgeport Central on the show. You know, we're talking about Ludlow almost on a weekly basis now, which is great. Ward, Norwalk, you know, Stanford a couple years ago. So we're talking about these schools. So it's not always New Canaan, Greenwich, Staples, St. Joe's, Darien. No, we're getting the whole league involved, which to me makes this job a lot more fun.
Definitely does for me. The same schools are going to have that success. They're set up for it, but it's always good when I get to different places and get to write about programs and teams and kids that I don't always get a chance to. We look ahead and we go back now to another final week of Alliance games, and we'll get a little bit more insight into some of the teams. I know I'm looking ahead here. I always fill out a schedule the week before of games that I think I'm going to end up covering. And you've got West Haven at Staples, an interesting game. They've had a bit of a tradition in recent years of playing each other. Bunnell's coming in New Canaan. Will the Rams get tested? And then two teams going on the road. Darien's going to be at Massac. And Ludlow, this is actually a really big game for them in terms of trying to figure out if they're going to be able to make a run at a playoff spot again with a young team. Ludlow goes to Shelton.
Yeah. You know, Dave, this is one of the things that I think is such a positive about the Alliance. You know, we went into last week with three games on our schedule, and only one of them came back as a decent game, Greenwich-Norwalk. We're looking at 5, 6, 7 games here that are all – they could be good matchups, you know. I also had St. Joe's at Southington. I know Southington is a little different. And then Wilton at Cheshire I also have. You know, so I think these are all big games. I think it's credit to the Alliance people who put these together. But the one that I'm really, really interested in, Bunnell at New Canaan, because, you know, all of them here in, you know, the past couple weeks, you know, Bunnell is very good, deservedly so. They got a player in their team who's fantastic. I believe his last name is Ricketts or something. But, you know, let's see what they do against a high-quality FCAC opponent. You know, West Haven at Staples, it's a huge game, but been there, done that. You know, it seems that they might as well just be marking now. They're going to play each other. It seems like they play each other every year now, so... But and then Darien at Massac was my other real big one. So I'm going to see how we do against the other conferences in the state. And to me, it's always very exciting because you're playing teams besides West Haven Staples. You're playing teams you normally do not play.
Nine, the league went 12-4 last week in the first round of Alliance games, and with the win, actually, well, it was a split this week with Ward winning and Central losing, so 13-5 right now in Alliance games. But the FCAC has held up strong, and not just on the top end, but the middle and the bottom as well. And I think what we're seeing right now is the middle class of the league is I thought we were going to see is a little bit bigger than we thought. And we're going to have more games like that Trumbull-Wilton game. You know, we're going to throw Norwalk and Ludlow into part of that mix in terms of a lot of games with them playing each other and it being critical for them to get into the postseason. And, you know, I think the top, we've got anywhere from three to five schools. I'm not sure how many yet. I need to see a little bit more body of work. And then there are a few teams that I think are going to have rough years.
Yeah, I agree, Dave. The top is always going to be the top. You know, you just reshuffle the order that you want. You know, there's the five teams up top. They're always going to be up there. You know, no matter what, they're going to be up top. And then you do have the middle. And then, Dave, you always have that tier two team, if we want to call it that. We want that tier two team that always has that tier one year. You know, Wilton 2 years ago, possibly Wilton this year. You know, Norwalk in 2021, you know, they had that phenomenal year. Stanford 3 years ago, you know. So you always have that tier two team that has that tier one capability. Let's just see who's going to be that team. Who's it going to be?
I saw them yesterday.
Yeah, I didn't want to sound like a homer, but
no, you're not. You're credible. You're very credible. You'll talk if you think Norwalk struggled, you'll say so.
Yeah. And Dave, if you remember before the year started, I've been good. 2 years ago, I said Stanford. Okay, last year I said Lovo. Who did I tell you this year? Do you remember?
Yep.
Norwalk
High. you told me normally I would have gone into yesterday not knowing about Easton Pace, and you're the one who gave me the heads up on him. And yeah, he's gonna be a lot of fun to watch, and I hope I'm gonna be watching him for 2+ years and not just for 8 and maybe more games. So yeah, it's fun. I'm going to end up seeing Norwalk playing again, and that's a good thing.
Yes, it's a great thing. And Dave, we talked about a couple of minutes before, there's nothing like playing in front of your hometown when your team is successful because the whole town comes out and watches you.
Okay, as we finish up here, I swore I wasn't going to do this. I'm wearing my Giants hat again in the studio, and I almost burned them last week and put it on social media, but give me a reason tonight for some optimism.
Here's my thing, Dave. They're playing Sunday night. There's a good chance I'm going to be too tired that I don't have to watch the second half.
I'll tell you what, I'm so down on them right now, and you know, they're bringing back Shane and Dobble, which to me was just kind of like, okay, we don't care. And it just really, really bothered me, and they haven't fixed the offensive line. I feel stupid because I finally got suckered in on that neighbor's touchdown catch with 25 seconds to go. It's the first time I like cheered watching a game at home, and I don't know how long. And then I see Bowens going into a prevent defense against a team with the best kicker in the league.
Yeah. I promise I wasn't going to get upset today, but you just did it. They showed signs last week. Russell Wilson showed that, you know what, he's still a legit quarterback in the league. But, man, with that defensive front, why go to a prevent? Let the guys go. Play your normal defense. Throw two guys over top just in case, and you'll be fine. But, nope, can't be done.
What makes it worse for me, I'm apathetic. I'm not even getting upset anymore. I'm just apathetic. I watch the game the same way I shower in the morning and I brush my teeth twice. So, all right. Good show, Sean. We'll have a lot to talk about next week, so let's do it again.
Absolutely, Dave.
Thanks again to Charlie Calabrese and Christian Parisi. You listen to Sunday Morning Quarterback. Have a good week, everybody. We'll see you next Sunday.